Real quick, before we get into the show, I wanted to share a new service called Getida that Ken and I have been using that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for firing the man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?
Welcome everyone to the Firing the Man podcast, a show for anyone who wants to be their own boss. If you sit in a cubicle every day and know you are capable of more, then join us. This show will help you build a business and grow your passive income streams in just a few short hours per day. And now your hosts, serial entrepreneurs, David Schomer and Ken Wilson.
Welcome everyone to the Firing the Man podcast. On today's episode, we have the pleasure of interviewing Yong Su. Yong Su left a successful career in cryptocurrency software to found his eight-figure e-commerce business, Urban EDC, a venture with an impressive social media following. He then went to launch Growth Jet, a climate-neutral, certified third-party logistics company. Yong Su is passionate about sharing his experiences with other entrepreneurs so they can start companies that are both profitable and sustainable. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So first things first, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your path to becoming an e-commerce entrepreneur?
In 2015, I was at a cryptocurrency startup in San Francisco. I joined the company early 2014, and then towards the end of 2015, there were a lot of regulations that were coming into play, and our team was literally blocked from proceeding any further because of regulations. And so at that point, you know, I had a decision to make because I always like to move forward, and I like to, you know, just keep making progress. And I just felt like, you know, really, really stuck, just not being able to continue to move forward. So, you know, I started dabbling in some things that I found interesting. So actually the first item that I wanted to get into was were these headphones that I had. And so were like earbuds. So they're like high fidelity earbuds. And I actually got them on wholesale and got like $10,000 worth, $20,000 worth of inventory without doing any testing or anything, which is a huge mistake. And so I got those, and I was going to do an Amazon FBA. So you know, I reached out to all these providers that would do all the prep work for it and then send them off to all the distribution centers. I found out that it's a lot harder to sell on Amazon than just putting them up on Amazon, right? So they just were not moving at all. At that point, you know, I had to pivot, and I decided that this is back in 2015. And so I felt like the market for e-commerce moving slowly towards, you know, Shopify and the whole direct consumer market. And so I thought about kind of pivoting more in that area. You know, I was looking at things that I was buying on a regular basis and spending a lot of time on. And, you know, these are things like pens, like titanium machine pens, everyday carry gear. I thought these earphones are not selling on Amazon. Maybe I can pivot this and sell those earphones as kind of like as part of the everyday carry store, right? So I launched a shop called Urban EDC Supply, and EDC stands for Everyday Carry. At that point, you know, I actually bought stuff off of Amazon because I learned my lesson that you need to validate first. So I had all of this inventory just like not moving at all. I actually created Urban EDC with the intention of creating a channel the rest of these headphones, which was an interesting play, I guess. And so yeah, eventually got you know, sold through those headphones, and stop kind of pivoted into a little more, you know, we got pocket knives in the store now, flashlights, pry bars, utility tools. And so it's definitely evolved since, but that's kind of how it, you know, how I first started getting into e-commerce.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thanks for sharing, Yong Su. So I have to ask you a question about the cryptocurrency. It sounds like you were involved in crypto very early. And so I've heard all these stories. Are you one of those guys that are on like the crypto cruises where you got in super early or not? There was a story that I heard about. I think it was someone that bought pizza with Bitcoin. That's what it was.
Right.
Any crazy stuff with their crypto stuff, or was it too early on?
Well, actually it was early. So I actually joined a company before Ethereum was around, and actually Vitalik was touring our office, and I actually saw him and met him when that happened. I mean, it was just still early, and so I did, you know, I was fortunate enough to invest in some XRP at the time. I just kind of, you know, I wanted to forget about it, and you know, I feel like for me, like, I don't know, I just feel like if I make an investment in something and stuff, you know, and it really blows up like crypto has in recent years, it doesn't feel like I really earned it. And so I almost don't want that to become, you know, what I'm known for. You know what I mean? Like that pizza guy you're talking about, like, I mean, he's forever going to be known as the Bitcoin pizza guy, right?
So, right. Yeah. Yeah, I totally get it.
So I just didn't get, yeah. So, I mean, I was really fortunate to get in early and to be where I am because, you know, I got in as like an early employee at this cryptocurrency company as a software engineer. And so I was actually very fortunate. And to be honest, like after, you know, it blew up in 2017, I was like, oh man, like, should I have stayed a little longer? Right. You know, I don't really regret my decision just because, like I said, I don't want to be known as like, oh yeah, you know, that guy, like, yeah, my friend, he, you know, invested whatever. And now he's like, living on yachts or whatever. Like that to me is not the story that I want people to know about me. And so I've kind of like moved on from that. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And now it's I think crypto probably is like one of those things in a, you know, kind of like a once in a lifetime, like thing that comes out and is so volatile. Risk reward is like so out of balance that it's just crazy. And so moving on to e-commerce. And so you've got a bunch of experience with, you know, starting company, kind of pivoting, moving into another one, figuring it out. Can you go over some of the kind of the fundamentals of business operations, kind of what you learned and show the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's like three key systems when you are trying to build a company. The first one is you need to be able to build brand awareness. So this is like marketing. This is, you know, getting people into your shop, essentially. So all the activities that you do to get people aware of your brand and then actually shopping on your site, that's all part of this first system, which is like brand generation awareness. And then the second part is value delivery. You know, if someone orders an item, then how do they actually get that item to their house, right? So this is stuff like customer service, your fulfillment and logistics, maybe like a follow-up email sequence where you ask them if they're happy. This is all part of that value delivery system. And then the third part is kind of more of a general operations. And so you're looking at both of those parts and you have to be looking at metrics or like a dashboard to make sure like shipments are not late or, you know, your retention rate for your customers is high and like things like that. So that's like the third, I guess, process or system that you should really think about. And I always like to start with yourself. So when you first begin a new venture, obviously you're going to be doing most of the work, like 99.9% of it. But then as you grow, you want to hire specific roles and then do those tasks along with your teammates. And so I call this the I, we, they framework. And so step one is the I part where you're doing all the work. Step two is like the we part where you're doing the work alongside your team and like kind of getting all the standard operating procedures in place. And then the third step is kind of replacing yourself from the day-to-day operations where your team is handling all of that for you. And so at that point, you can take a step back and really look at your business as, you know, from a crazy, you know, like a high point of view and saying, oh, this is where we need to keep expanding, right? So these are like expansion things or, you know, figuring out strategic partnerships, perhaps even like acquisitions. So those are like more high level things that you should be looking at, you know, that you would never be able to do if you're actually working inside the business, right? So those are kind of the three levels. If you have systems in place for all three of those, then I think you're in a really good place.
That's awesome. One quick follow-up question on the branding play. Now, for all of the Amazon listeners here, you know, if you go into a large marketplace like an Amazon or a Walmart, they're bringing the eyeballs to your products. Now, direct to consumer, you're in charge of, you know, getting eyeballs in front of your products. And so what are some avenues and channels that you're using and you're seeing success with getting eyeballs on products for a direct to consumer brand?
Yeah, it's a great question. So this really depends on where your potential target audience is hanging out. So for urban EDC, people were taking photos of things that they were carrying with them on a daily basis and posting them on Instagram. And so Instagram was the primary channel for us to generate brand awareness. And so actually when I started urban EDC, I actually started the account as a repost account. So I would repost other people's photos and give them credit, of course. And then they would actually thank me like, hey, thanks for reposting my photo. And then some of them might follow me back. And I built this account to about 10,000 followers. And then at that point, that's actually when, you know, I thought was a good place to launch the brand. And so I think it's really important to find out where your customers are hanging out and then go into that community and talk to them. Hey, what's your pain pain point, like what do you want to see, and then kind of build with them. There's this concept called build in public, where bringing your audience with you to try to solve a problem that you may have or that they may have, and then that you can kind of like get your early supporters on board, and then just grow from there. And I would definitely say one strategy that's been really helpful is collaboration. So look for people that have strengths. So this strength can be like a content creator, like they're really good at making, you know, whatever viral YouTube videos. You know, you can find them and then work with them, build a relationship first. So like number one rule for collaborations is don't treat these as transactional relationships. So they need to be genuine. So it could take up to like 6 months to a year to build that relationship. But you know, for example, content creator, you work with them and then you might send them products and, you know, they'll plug it into their videos or whatever, right? So, and then there's other collaborations you can do with like brands, for example. So like a brand to brand collaboration, you can share your product to both audiences. And then the really powerful collaborations that we've done is actually a co-created product collaboration where you have either a brand or a content creator, you can partner up with them and create a product together. And so at that point, for example, a content creator, they're going to be selling their own gear for you. And the great thing is you have the relationship with suppliers and you have, you know, all the logistical fulfillment stuff figured out, because a content creator does not have that. All right. So it's kind of like play to your strengths and definitely collaborate with other people doing cool stuff in that industry to grow your brand.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw me, but anybody that's watching on YouTube, you probably saw me. I'm taking notes down here on all of these tactics that you're sharing. So those are awesome. I really like it. So over to you, David.
Yeah. I also was taking notes. And interesting, we actually had a meeting today internally talking about how do we point our social media people in the right direction. And I think a lot of our listeners run into this where maybe social media is an afterthought, or maybe it's something that they're doing on their own. And I do kind of want to go down this tangent, if you won't mind. So say one of our listeners has been handling social media themselves, they hire somebody. Now it's the I, we, they. Okay. What would be some of the first things you would coach them on and strategies you would implement with a new social media manager?
I think a lot of people approach social media the wrong way. Most people approach it as, you know, we have something that we want to tell you, or I have something I want to tell you, right? So it's like a broadcast system. But in reality, social media network is, you know, you got to be like quote unquote social on it. And so you have to talk to people. So you have to engage with your followers. And so if you go on it and you're constantly just broadcasting, I mean, people are going to get tired of that really soon. But if you engage with them, like if someone posts a photo of their new pocket knife, for example, and we comment and say, hey, that's awesome. Like, you know, how do you use it? Or just ask them like a simple question, right? They love that stuff. And they'll be like, oh, you know, I just went fishing or whatever. And, you know, I use it for this. And like that little interaction there is going to like, he's going to be so much more, feel so much more of a connection to your brand just because you cared enough to just ask one question back, right? So I think social media are doing it wrong, where they just see it as one-way street of a broadcast system, where it really is supposed to be a two-way street interaction, you know, just talking, engaging with each other. And I found that if you do that properly, then, you know, they'll tell their friends like, hey, guess what? Like, you know, this company actually responded back to me on a post and a tab for me, and like they love that. Great example is like we had customers give us feedback, so they get a feedback email, so we asked them after each purchase, and somebody like responded and was like, hey, can you implement this on the website? And like I just happened to be on the computer that day, and this was like a Saturday, so I was just like, it's a slow Saturday, so I was on the computer, and I like quickly implemented it, and I told him, hey, like we did this, like check it out, what do you think? And he was like ecstatic. It's literally like he emailed me like I got feedback from him, and then I implemented it like maybe an hour or two later, and he was like, oh my gosh, you guys are the best, like how could, like that's so cool that you did that. And so I just feel like it's kind of like just, you know, you just got to care about your customer. Your customers are there. Obviously, they're going to buy stuff from you, but at the same time, they're human, right? So you got to build that relationship. So.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
Yeah, I really like that. And the broadcasting piece is kind of like, it's like, I don't know, it's a lot of the social media that I've been exposed to is like teaching the broadcasting and then looking at the metrics and seeing where you're getting the engagement. But I think your messaging, Youngsu, is like more or less like treat your customers like humans and have interactions and build trust and relationships with them. And I really like that. Went down the rabbit hole on social media. So I want to circle back and what are some ways, because social media, everything we've talked about now is kind of like branding, building that trust. Now, how do you drive revenue with social media? Or you just continue to drive that human contact and relationships, or how do you drive revenue?
Yeah. So social media also, I should mention, is all about building trust. I call this like, so there's like two different parts to it. The first part is discovery. The discovery, I call it these engines. So discovery engine is, you know, all the channels or all the tactics that you're using to get your brand noticed. So for example, if you're posting really great organic content on YouTube, let's say, right? Then YouTube algorithm is going to love that. And they're going to like put you up into people's feeds or playlists or whatever. And they're going to show that video over and over again. And then in that video, you could have like, hey, if you like this product, you know, go check it out at whatever website, plug yourself in there. And then, so that's discovery platform, because they don't know who you are and they're discovering you for the first time, right? And then at that point, they could subscribe to your channel, or if you're on like Instagram, they can follow you. And so that's a very, very important moment, because now the customer has actually opted in to receiving posts from you, right? So that's a very different relationship, where discovery is like, you have no idea. You're just scrolling through, you're doom scrolling, and you're like, oh, this is kind of a cool video. So you click on it and you watch for 5 seconds, right? But then when you follow some brand, then you're like, okay, I like what this brand is doing. I'm going to follow them so I could see more posts from them. That changes the dynamic completely. And then I would say email. So you want to also get them onto your emailing list. So follow is okay, but the email is really the driver, because it's deep platform. So you're not going to be, you know, if YouTube changes their algorithm, them, or they could ban you altogether. Heard horror stories about that too. And then you lose all your subscribers, right? So you want a deep platform, all of your followers, to emailing list, because nobody owns email. It's decentralized. So once you get them on an email, then the trust building can begin. And so email is a great way to build trust. Podcasting is a great way to build trust. And it could take a long time. So for e-commerce owners, I really recommend having a fantastic welcome flow on your email sequence. So when someone, you know, enters their email in for the first time, send them a welcome email that says, hey, thanks for joining the family. Like, here's what you can expect from us moving forward. And then you can follow up every like 3 to 4 days, being like, oh, by the way, I started this company because of X, Y, and Z reasons. You know, I really want to make sure you're taken care of. We have really great customer service. If you ever need anything from us, email us, right? Third email might be like testimonials. Oh, these people would love us. Look at these reviews. And then, you know, one of these email welcome series, you can also ask them a question like, hey, like, you know, what do you use your pocket knife for? Just hit reply and let us know. Like, that's engagement also, like we talked about, right? These are all, so the email and podcasting are trust engines. And so we talked about discovery engine earlier, which is, you know, your brand awareness, just getting people to know who you are. And then the trust engine is like, people know who you are and they've given you permission to talk to them. But then you got to build that trust to a certain point where they're like, all right, I'm going to make this purchase because this person or this brand is so awesome. They're so cool. You know, I really want to just like support them. And then they make that purchase. And then at that point, you can also keep nurturing them. Like, you know, how is your purchase? Like all that stuff. But yeah, that's kind of the key things to remember, is like the discovery engine into your trust engine, and then continue to nurture that relationship, and then you'll get those sales if you have those two properly in place.
Yeah, that's dynamite. I'm taking more notes here, so I really like those responses.
David, over to you.
Can you talk about taking a passion and turning it into a successful side hustle?
First of all, if you found your passion, that's a really hard thing to do. A lot of people struggle with that. So like, that's great that you get to that place. And so after you found your passion, I would say definitely look at your skill sets and look at your past, you know, employment history. So, you know, if you have a lot of writing gigs under your belt and you enjoy writing, then you could marry whatever industry you're interested in with your writing and like write about that topic. So like, if you're really into sports and you're a great writer, then you can be the next Bill Simmons, right? And just write editorials on sports, right? So I think it's kind of like, you got to marry the interest that you have, the industry, with the skill set that, and that combination, it's like a Venn diagram where there's like overlap. That's kind of like your sweet spot of where you want to be. So yeah, and then I think really honestly, it's about just getting your reps in. So like if you're a writer, for example, like your first few articles are going to be terrible, but that's okay. Because like, you know, you're not going to become like, you know, like, for example, I'm sure even like LeBron James, when he first started playing basketball, I'm sure he wasn't nearly as good, right? So you have to get through that bad part in the middle to get to where you want to be. And you only get there by like just constantly experimenting and failing. And that's kind of like the whole thing. It's like, yeah, you'll do something and you'll look back on it 5 years later. And be like, wow, that was so bad. But like, that's good. That's great. Cause then you realize, oh, I've improved so much. Right. And so I think these are like the underrated, underappreciated things that people really don't talk about, because a lot of these shows and podcasts really highlight the successes. Like, oh, like look at this person. They've done X, Y, and Z. But really, it's like 5-10 years, like really being terrible at it that got them where they are. And so like that's really like where the good stuff is, right? So yeah, I mean, that I would say just stay at it, stay consistent, and eventually it'll start to click. Like you won't even notice it, but it'll start to click.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you know, great point there on, you know, people are just see the, you know, the little windows of time where success is, but they don't see the maybe the decade prior to that of grinding and grit and hustle. And so yeah, I always like it when we have entrepreneurs on the show and they highlight that because we should talk about it more. I think we learn more in that decade ever than we do in that little window of success. So next question. So I know you've got experience, you know, kind of growing businesses, giving back, sustainability, etc. So how can a bootstrapper, you know, small business kind of grow or evolve and also give back at the same time?
Yeah. So I think that giving back and bootstrapping can be done at the same time, because I think that if you have the right values in place as a brand, then that'll actually be a competitive advantage for you in the marketplace. And so let's say you donate like 1% to the planet or whatever, that could be enough for someone who's deciding to throw two products to say, I'm actually going to support your brand because they're actually a socially responsible company. And like this other company, it's not. And so you're actually at that point, it could function as like a, you know, it's almost like a differentiating factor. I don't know if you've heard the term purple cow, except goated. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of like you want to stand out from the crowd, and having strong values with, you know, having a social good attached to your business model is very, very strong. So I think that bootstrappers can utilize that, and that'll also attract a lot of customers who you want to attract. And so one thing that I also tell a lot of entrepreneurs is like, you don't want everybody as your market, because that means that you will attract, you're going to dilute yourself, and you're not going to build that core group of community members or tribe members that stands for something. So you want to be selective about who your customers are. And so if you have those values and, you know, you're sustainable, or, you know, you're giving back somehow, then people who also feel that way are going to support you and join you. Whereas people who are like, you know, don't care about those things, they're going to go somewhere else where all they care about is like price and like, I don't know, speed of delivery, I guess, but like they don't care, right? So they're not going to buy from you. And that's okay, because you didn't want those customers in the first place. And so it's kind of like this, you flip the script and say, how do I make this, you know, socially good part of the business model where I can utilize it as a tool to attract the customers that I'm looking for? That's the way to think about it, rather than like, oh, you know, I'm bootstrapping, I don't have the money, how can I still give back? Like, I think that's a little bit of the wrong way to look at things. I think it should be the other way around.
One follow-on question to that is, when I think of giving back, I often think of a percentage of revenue is given to X organization, or for every widget we sell, we plant a tree. Are there any creative ways that you've found that maybe make a higher impact or you know, have a higher impact to your customers?
I think that if you say that you plant tree, for example, for every product sold, I think that kind of incentive is really compelling, because the customer feels like they have control. Like literally, like I buy this product and they will plant the tree on behalf of my purchase, right? So I think if it's very clearly laid out like that, where you're empowering the customer, I mean, essentially they're making the decision, like I buy this product, they plant the tree. I buy this competitor product and they don't do anything to pay. Like, okay, I'm going to buy this product because I want to plant the tree. And so like they're making that decision themselves. And I think that that's really worked well for them, well for us too, because we actually have a product that we plant the tree for. And that's a really compelling reason to support the product itself.
That one as a consumer has always got me, is plant a tree, because who is against planting trees?
Yeah. I wanna... how can you be against planting trees?
Yeah. I really like that one. And there's not many other things like that. Kind of live in a divisive society, but I would say everyone is on board with planting trees. So I really like that. So can we turn the corner and start talking about product research and identifying profitable products to sell? I spent a good bit of time today on Urban EDC, and you have some super cool products. So I'm interested, like maybe some general rules that you use, and like more specifically, how did you identify those awesome products to sell?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think this is tricky because it depends on which stage of your business is in. And so at the very beginning, you don't have an audience to get feedback from. And so I like to just start from my own problem. You know, every day when you're doing things, you'll see things that frustrate you, right? Like, there's a reason why like a spoon is the way it's shaped, right? Because you're trying to like eat cereal or whatever, right? So imagine if that spoon was like, I don't know, like extremely heavy or plastic or whatever. And like, it's not, you're not using it, that like you can't use it. Like that's a problem that you see on a daily basis. Like if you are feeling a little bit of friction during your day with whatever thing that you're interacting with in terms of a product, like that's a good opportunity to really question like, oh, can I make this better, right? And I think that it's important to start with your own experience, because you'll invest time into that, and you'll kind of like really get to know that product really well, versus like you go from the other side and like, oh, you know, hair dryers. Like, so I don't use hair dryers, right? But oh, there's a market for it. The market is huge for hair dryers. Like, how do I get in? Like, I feel like that's a little bit harder because you just don't know the market at all. And how do you, you know, you can't really approach it from that angle, in my opinion. So I think it's important to start from your own problem first. And then the second step, I think, is look at products that are similar and look at their reviews and see what people are either saying what's really great about it or complaining about, because that will give you insights into what you should improve on for your product, whatever you're interested in, right? So for the spoon example, you can search like spoons on Amazon, whatever, and like read through thousands of reviews and see like, is it weight? Is it, dimensions or whatever it is, and get a sense of like how you can improve that product. And then after a while, like, for example, you were mentioning Urban EDC, you can build products directly from feedback of your customers. And so that's kind of like an important inflection point where you get to a certain point and you no longer have to do that product research yourself. You just ask your customers, what do you want to see next? And they will just tell you. You shouldn't take all of it don't take all 100% of that feedback. Like, just see a pattern. Like, you know, one person might really want this, but like all the other people don't want it. So I think you kind of have to look for patterns instead of just listening to like individual feedback. And then once you see that, then you can kind of make judgments on, you know, what product we should build next. And it's important that you're kind of the innovator in that area. You shouldn't be like, if the old saying, like Henry Ford, I think it's like, you know, people wanted a faster transportation vehicle, they would say faster horses instead of like a car. Like, people can't imagine like the next thing that they need. They just want like a little bit improvement over whatever is there, right? So I think it's important to like get feedback, but then like you should take that feedback and like really like imagine like, okay, how do I solve this thing for this customer, and like approach it that way. And then you can like ask them like, hey, what do you think about this, before you do your like large production run or whatever. So I think it's important to kind of approach it that way.
And also, yeah, having that experience of like using those products and knowing more about them than just kind of the guessing game or using metrics in a tool. Excellent advice. So I want to jump into, I hear you have a podcast. Can you talk about your podcast, First Class Founders?
I wanted to share my lessons to all current and future entrepreneurs. And I just wanted a medium for me to express my ideas and my thoughts. And so First Class Founders is that channel for me to do that. And so, you know, when you first begin as an entrepreneur, there isn't like a manual, right? There's no manual, like how-to guide for being a successful entrepreneur. So I kind of wanted to create that, I don't know, like, you know, these are mini lessons that I've learned, and I guess frameworks and kind of concepts and mental models that I use that have really helped me. And so it's kind of like marry those frameworks with real life experiences that I've experienced, kind of combining those together and sharing that with the audience. So yeah, First Class Founders, you can find that at firstclassfounders.com. We're on Apple and Spotify and everywhere else. So
very nice. And to all of our listeners that are driving, we're going to post that in the show notes. So keep driving, keep your eyes open. So we cannot end this podcast without talking about Humphrey. Can you tell us about Humphrey and his following?
Yes, that's it. So we brought home a French bulldog. We actually named him Humphrey before we found him. But then when we saw him, he was such a Humphrey that it was like just a match, perfect match, right? And yeah, we brought him home in 2017 and we started taking photos and videos and posting them on Instagram. And just people really liked his personality. I mean, I'm a little biased, but I think he's a pretty good looking bulldog. And he just got a lot of followers very quickly early on. And we wanted to, I guess, kind of leverage, you know, the operations that we have with Urban EDC, like the fulfillment and logistics side of it. And so my wife, she launched Spotted by Humphrey, which is a dog boutique selling, you know, carefully curated, playful dog toys, leashes, harnesses, all that. And yeah, Humphrey is part of the crew, you know, part of the team. And yeah, it's kind of funny because we just didn't anticipate that happening with bringing home a French bulldog, but it just kind of naturally evolved that way. And we wanted to leverage our strengths and to be able to, you know, to start this new brand using, I guess, Humphrey's audience. So
yeah, super cool. I had to look up the pictures of Humphrey. So I have an old English bulldog. I love
it. Oh, love it. Love English bulldogs too.
Yeah. They're just great pets, I think. So moving on here, can you explain a little bit, what is GrowthJet and how can it be helpful to listeners in the e-commerce space?
Yeah, perfect. So as I mentioned earlier, we have brought fulfillment in-house. We were originally using a third-party logistics company, 3PL, and we had a lot of issues. And this is like, I did hours of research trying to find the best 3PL. And we had a lot of issues with like theft, for example. Like literally customers were getting empty boxes. So when they were picking and packing, they would take the item out of the box and ship an empty box to the customer. So things like that, and like, you know, $5,000 worth of missing goods, like it was just a nightmare. And so decided to bring everything in-house, and then we launched Spotted by Humphrey. And so we leveraged kind of our systems, our back, you know, back office systems, operational stuff. And then people were asking us like, who's doing a fulfillment, because, you know, I'm having a lot of issues with our fulfillment, you know, can you help us? And so we actually launched without a name and without a website. So we had paying clients before website and before name. And then in 2019, we decided, hey, let's take this thing to the next level. We built that a website. That's how GrowthJet was born. And so GrowthJet is a climate neutral certified third party logistics provider. So we offset all of our carbon footprint for 2020, 2021, and we're working on 2022. And so we talked about the whole value thing earlier. So we attract a lot of brands that care about sustainability and kind of like, we attract a lot of value driven brands. And so if anybody is looking for fulfillment and you're a pretty fast growing brand, then hit me up and you can just email me directly at yongsoo@hey.com. That's Yongsoo at hey.com. And yeah, I can kind of take the conversation from there.
That's awesome. I really like that concept too. And I think it's really, really important to have startups and have businesses like that growing. And I think I see that expanding in the future. I think a lot of the younger generations really are motivated by sustainability and by preserving the environment. So really, I like what you're doing. I really respect that.
Yeah, no, I think it's important.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
No, I was just going to say, I think that you're absolutely right in that the world is kind of like, you know, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
I feel like it's elevating, like the whole world is like trying to elevate. And I think that values, the whole social part of it is so, such an important part now in everyone's minds that yeah, I totally agree with you that it's a super important part of, or it should be for every brand.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the listeners, the hierarchy, the pyramid, food, water, shelter, and I think it's happiness and love. And so like, yeah, it's a great point that, you know, that we're getting civilization, we're getting so advanced that food, water, shelter is becoming like ubiquitous. And now we're kind of seeking out that last little tip of the pyramid. So awesome. David, anything else you want to cover before we move into the fire round?
No, let's get into it.
Okay, awesome. Yongsoo, are you ready for the fire round?
Yeah, let's do it.
What is your favorite book?
Anything written by Jim Collins. He's got really great frameworks. It's just a joy to read. He studies like companies and just sees what's successful, what's not. And yeah, just learn a lot from him. So yeah, anything by Jim Collins.
Awesome. What are your hobbies?
So strangely enough, I actually love building businesses. That's, I know it's surprising, but so yeah, I would say that. And then I like to take, go on nature walks to hang out with my wife and our two French bulldogs. Love traveling. So yeah, those things.
What is the one thing that you do not miss about working for the man?
This one's easy. And that is, politics. So I just really, really don't like politics, whole politics thing. So yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Last one. What do you think sets apart successful e-commerce entrepreneurs from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
Yeah. So I think it's important to start. So if you haven't started yet, the most important thing is start. And then at that point, it's consistency. And then after that, it's iterating based on feedback. It's kind of like a three-part thing. But if you can master kind of like those areas, then I think you're in a really, really good spot.
Excellent answer. That's we'll call that Young Su's roadmap for success. So awesome. David, over to you to close out the show.
All right, Young Su, I want to thank you for being a guest on the Firing Demand podcast. If people are interested in getting in touch with you, what would be the best way?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I'm just at Young Su Chung. And then you can also just email me if you want, youngsu@hey.com. And then you can also listen to the podcast at firstclassfounders.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.
Before you go, we wanted to share a new service that Ken and I have been using called Getida that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A.com, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for Firing the Man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?